I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Cool fact, a crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Also, you can get health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
When Diplomacy Fails presents...
Hello and welcome to When Diplomacy Fails.
Hey guys, welcome to When Diplomacy Fails. Welcome to When Diplomacy Fails.
Hello and welcome to
Hello
When Diplomacy
Hello and welcome
fails.
To When Diplomacy Fails.
A project 5 years in the making.
The Franco-Prussian War.
The 7 Years' War.
Of the When Diplomacy Fails special on Napoleon.
The Crimean War.
To When Diplomacy Fails special on World War One.
The Dutch Revolt.
To the When Diplomacy Fails special on the 30 Years' War.
The July Crisis Anniversary Project.
The Swedish Deluges.
Britain goes to war.
The 1916.
To the Franco-Dutch War of 1672.
This is When Diplomacy Fails Remastered.
Hello there, history friends. Welcome to When Diplomacy Fails Remastered. Another collaboration. Yet another collaboration, because I just figured you guys deserved it. And I thought you'd be really, really interested to hear what this particular fellow had to say. If you didn't know who Aziz was, that's actually his middle name, but he goes by Aziz, so that's fine. If you didn't know who Aziz was, he runs the History of Westeros podcast. Which, yes, I realise is something of an anachronism, because there can't be any history in Westeros, because Westeros isn't a real place, because Game of Thrones and A Song of Ice and Fire was created, incepted by one man, George R. R. Martin. But hey, we get into that, we get into fantasy, we get into Patreon, we get into designing things, creating things, world building, we get into all sorts of stuff in this two-part interview. Yes, there is a second part. This first part is kind of like a... How would you describe it? I suppose I talked to him about the books. I talked to him about literature, about creating fantasy, about whether or not all of that is worthwhile. He's a very big fan of the books. You may have noticed he's one of those... You can't say hipster, because that's not at all accurate. He's a true fan, is what you could say. Aziz is a true fan of Game of Thrones. And that is fair enough. We're very happy to have him on. It's almost diversifying the different people I talk to, because even though he's only making a History of Westeros podcast, he's very much interested in all sorts of history, which we get into as well. In short, if you thought you knew Aziz from his History of Westeros podcast, you do not know him as much as you think you do, and this is a great opportunity to get to know him more, or to completely discover him altogether if you've never heard of him before in your life. Please do check out A History of Westeros if you are interested at all in kind of the lore, the setting, the kind of established world that Game of Thrones is set in. As you may or may not be aware, July is when the new season of Game of Thrones drops, which of course is a very busy time of the year for him, because he reviews all the new episodes. So yeah, it is going to be a busy year as well, because the new book is supposed to be coming out. Well, has he even put a date on it? I'm not sure, but either way, he's a busy man, he's a successful man as well, he's a self-made man, he's making money, he's professional. He's a professional guy running a podcast based on something that he's had a profound interest in for, well, most of his adult life, really, since 2001, he says. So he's a great guy, a great ambassador to have on, and this is only like about an hour of the conversation, but we talked for a good 2 hours all together, and I spliced together the relevant parts, because, I mean, you don't want to hear our crazy mad ramblings. But yeah, he's a great guy, and I'm sure he'll be on again soon. So make sure you listen to the second part, which is of course released the same day as the first part, because that's the kind of guy I am. Hope you're enjoying When Diplomacy Fails Remastered, folks. And I hope you enjoy this episode. Thanks, and I'll see you soon.
I think they showed a picture one time, the most Irish thing ever. It was like this guy showing up, going to mass, but in a tractor. And he couldn't get out of the tractor, so he got his... This was back on Ash Wednesday now, so the priest came out, of course, and did the ash on his forehead, and he drove on his way then. Oh, yeah. My country is weird sometimes, but yeah.
Indeed.
You know, despite my name, I'm more Irish than anything else.
Really?
Yeah, my mother's maiden name is Ryan, Pamela Ryan.
Okay.
My grandfather, James H. Ryan.
Okay.
Yeah.
So he wasn't by any chance a private, was he?
Ah, no, he was a lieutenant colonel. He was, at one point, he had to pass through that. But yeah, he was a soldier, so.
Well, I think <That's> like, saving Lieutenant Colonel Ryan, I think, was going to be the sequel, but they couldn't get approval for it. So.
That's right.
Cool.
I've made plenty of Irish Iraqi jokes because that's what my name is, Iraqi.
And I bet you get it a lot that people like look at your name and they expect you to not sound the way you sound at all.
Oh yeah, that's happened a lot. I have had when I had a regular job, I was a IT consultant for a while, and I worked for a small company of about 30 people, and they flew all the Canadian people down to meet us, and they had only ever talked to me on the phone. This is before, you know, Skype was a thing, else we probably would have seen each other. But they're like, they come down and they're all everyone's being introduced, and one of them like double takes and just looks at me and is like, "Wait, you're Aziz?" And I'm like, "Yeah, that's me." I'm like, "Oh, I thought you..." Okay, never mind. He didn't finish the sentence. He's like, "Yeah,
I finished that sentence." Like a foot-long beard and a big like turban. What's going on?
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, thanks very much for coming on. I really appreciate this. This is great.
Yeah, very cool. I'm glad you're doing this. It's a good idea, and I'm impressed with this output that you've taken on here.
Well, let's see. I told them I was going to break the internet, so let's see what happens. I mean, Kim Kardashian's got nothing on this, really. Really happy to have you on. Really happy to do this. So it's basically going to be I don't want to call it interview. I kind of want to call it collaborations is what I'm calling them, or collabs for short. So you're one among about... I'd say 12 collaborations now coming up on. I'm part of this Agora podcast network as well, so that's kind of like a few of my buddies from that kind of decided to go on. It was like I did them all in kind of stages, and the likes of your interview, it's not really like, obviously I didn't do a Westeros episode, so it's kind of like this is unrelated to anything that I've remastered, but it kind of just adds to the whole woohoo atmosphere of it all. So yeah,
right on. That's cool.
You know Royfield Brown, he does a load of different podcasts. He does like 10 American Presidents, How Jamaica Conquered the World, loads of random ones. What he wanted to do, I think, was to make podcaster network. The idea is that we're all like independent, but that we're all kind of tied to this agreement, if you like. So yeah,
it helps with obviously that kind of thing really helps with the advertisers.
Yeah, because we're with we're all on Acast as well, and the way Acast do it is they present
We're on Acast too.
Oh, how are you finding it?
Good. It's been up and down. I think it's overall very good in their model.
That's about
it's been pretty good. We've gotten a couple of sponsors and what's that?
Got that mattress.
Yeah, they had a couple of free goodies. We got a Casper mattress.
You got a free mattress. That's cool. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. That was very nice because we needed a new one, and we're like, whoa, once we installed it, we're like, whoa, we really needed a new one.
Yeah.
We didn't realize. It's a very good mattress.
isn't that surreal, though? Like, do you ever imagine that, like, by podcasting, you get a mattress? Like, how does that even correlate? Like, what is it with these mattress people? Like, it's so bizarre.
They're all over because you hear that, like, the joke that we all know what sponsors are out there, you know, Casper and Blue Apron and Squarespace and
Blue Apron, yeah.
stamps.com, and some of them are probably different for you guys because of, you know, different countries, but it's just basically the same groups.
Yeah, it's just so funny.
Of course, Amazon book sales. That's the Amazon links. That's the other really big one.
Oh, yeah. We got Audible as well. I tried to do Audible right a while ago.
That market's pretty saturated, but it's still, you can still get hits on that. We got 4 last month. It's not exactly like a... I mean, that's $40, so that's, you know, something.
Yeah, it's $40.
I don't sneeze at $40. I'm a podcaster. I can't sneeze at $40.
Yeah. I mean, it's not a mattress, but I mean, it's $40.
That's right. That's several dinners.
Yeah. It's so funny. You measure it in terms of, like, what can I eat with this, or, like, how much kind of... How much fun things can I get with this? And you're like, hold on, I actually have to, this is my living, so I have to spend it on sensible things now. Yeah.
Like coffee.
Like coffee, useful stuff. Yeah.
I got a free bag of coffee 2 days ago. It was like the greatest thing ever. Am I making you jealous?
Oh, a little bit, yeah. I mean, like, I'm kind of broke at the moment as well because, like, getting married and...
About to get married, yeah. I was
gonna say. So it's kind of like anything shiny or anything else, it's like, ooh. Well, I guess we could kind of just get into it now then. I mean, for me, even just say, I notice on the show, what I really appreciated, you very rarely say or ah or anything like that. Like, only, I'd say... once or twice in an episode almost, which is very, like, that's a skill, Aziz. Like, that's very impressive, really. I suppose, well, because it's like a conversational one, you probably got used to doing it.
Well, it's part of it. It's partly that. There's three things. One is that it's just, you know, being kind of conscious of it. Two is I edit some of them out. edit ums out. Three is that I realize that I have just evolved into something else. Instead of I do... I'll say, and it's the equivalent. It's the verbal equivalent. I'll go, so, or I'll go now, something like, I'll go so, now, or and drag it out. And that's my equivalent of or
Ah.
And so now I'm trying to stop doing that, but I edit those out too.
Yeah. See, the problem is if you don't do that, like, I just... Sometimes when I'm speaking and I need to think, I just don't say anything, and there's just silence. Then I have to just get rid of the silence, which I suppose is... still grand, but like for me, it's I say like a lot as well. I noticed, so
that's interesting. Yeah, I have a lip smack problem too. It's not as bad as it used to be, but those I very much edit those out. But I have like some of our older comments, like on our iTunes feed, would be like lip smacks. You know, like every once in a while, someone would mention it, and I didn't even know what that was at first. I didn't even know what a lip smack was. I'm like, what is that?
Yeah, I know, like. Well, like, certain people, like, obsess over certain things, and you're just making a podcast, and then you notice that these things, like, oh, what really bothers me, and then you get all kind of like, well, yours then, buddy, kind of thing, and then you're like, wait, maybe I do lip smack, whatever that is. Yeah.
Once I was made aware, I started hearing them. Now I just cringe every time I hear my own lip smack. I'm like, oh, God, I gotta delete that. Yeah. Yeah, oh, yeah, Shay is saying, we hear it on, like, we're so like hyper aware of it. When someone does it on like TV, it's like, oh my God, a TV lip smack. But yeah.
How rare is this? Oh boy, let's bottle it.
That's something that I appreciate about Dan Carlin too. He doesn't have lips. He has volume and consistency problems, especially with his early-ish episodes. Mm. But he doesn't do or lip smack. So that's cool.
Yeah. Yeah, because he has like a team, I'd say, at this stage now, doesn't he? Imagine if he joined Patreon. I'm surprised he hasn't.
I know. Like, I had this dream, this ambition of, since Danielli knows Dan Carlin well, I was like, if I can get History on Fire on Patreon, then maybe I can get Dan Carlin on Patreon.
I know why you're trying to do this. I know you're trying to get that commission extra.
Hell yeah, that commission. I got $250 for signing up Radio Westra, so yeah.
No way. Wow, fair play. Yeah.
Yeah, they did really well. Their Patreon is about the same size as ours. They got... theirs is per episode, and they do an episode every 6 weeks. So actually, their total is higher, but it's, you know, it's not higher because it's not per month. So it's kind of, you know, whatever. We got to get our dollars where we can.
Absolutely, yeah. No question about that.
It's pretty nice bonus because they get it also. The bonus goes to both sides, so they got the $250 also, which is Dan Carlin, the maximum. That's a surefire $500 bonus.
Oh yeah, at least, man. Yeah. The big challenge, I think, is getting people to go from Dan Carlin to like the other small fishes. Like, I kind of wish Dan Carlin would reach out to the history podcaster people more. And I guess that's probably the only kind of air of resentment I had. And also because I did this July Crisis project for the centenary of the outbreak of the First World War. And like people really liked it. And it's still one of my things that people find. And they're like, oh, I really liked that and everything. And that's cool. But then Dan Carlin did his Blueprint for Armageddon thing. Did that like a week after I finished it. And actually, and actually like parts of what he did were factually incorrect. But that's another story. Mm. But that got huge amounts of attention. And I was kind of just like, hello, I kind of did that, hello. Yeah. Ah, well, I mean, they're still learning history sometimes.
So. Yeah, got a lot of friends who, that's like one of the only podcasts they are even aware of.
Yeah, I think we're actually kind of ready to start. I mean.
For the third time.
Third time's a charm. No, that's okay. No, this is fun. I'm enjoying this.
I'm not bothered by this at all. That's good. I'm enjoying it too. Yeah.
Oh, cool. Well, I mean, I just want to say a big welcome to When Diplomacy Fails' podcast. Aziz, I'm really, really happy to have you on.
Well, thanks, Zach. I'm happy to be here. Thanks for having me. It's good to chat with a fellow podcaster and talk history and podcasting and whatever else we're going to get into.
No, we're going to get into a lot of stuff. Don't you worry. People didn't know exactly who you were. What would you describe yourself as?
Okay, well, like you said, my name is Aziz, and I am the host of the History of Westeros podcast, which is a show dedicated to the books and TV show for Game of Thrones. We got started with covering the books. I've been a fan of George R. R. Martin's material since 2001 or so is when I picked up the books, and I became obsessed with them. We all want a podcast about what we're passionate about, and like you, I started doing this as a hobby. And it became, over time, it morphed into a profession, and here we are. So
sure.
You could say that's the long version. The short version is that I'm a obsessed fan of Game of Thrones, A Song of Ice and Fire, and I like to talk about it a lot.
That's interesting you should say that, because my very first official question, I mean, we've talked for about an hour already, but my very first official question is exactly how obsessed are you with Game of Thrones?
Ooh, well, that's, I guess that's hard to quantify, so I'll give some examples, I suppose. 2001, a friend of mine handed me book one and said, read this. And this friend had a good reputation with me as far as recommendations. So I took his recommendation, read the book. And when I was, at the time, I was a traveling consultant. And when I finished the first book, I was in a hotel room, far away from my home. I was in California, and I live in Georgia, Atlanta, Georgia, and
sure.
I didn't have a car. So I finished the book, and I just basically prayed to the seven gods of Westeros that there was a bookstore in walking distance that I could find just so I could start this next book while I'm sitting here in my hotel room.
Yeah.
Sure enough, there was one about 2 miles away, so I was like, 2 miles, that's nothing, I'm walking. So I got myself to that bookstore, grabbed that book, continued on with my reading journey, and it never really slowed down. I don't know how many times I've read the books. It's uncountable at this time, and I've listened to them even more because audiobooks are just easier to go deal about your business while doing something else, you know, doing chores. Or like any podcaster knows, you can, because that's what we do. We tell people all the great times they could be listening to podcasts.
Sure. Oh, yeah. Big time. Yeah. I mean,
while working out or commuting is probably the biggest one. But so of course, audiobooks fit that mold just as well. So when the TV show was announced, of course, that was just wow, there's going to be a TV show for this. And it was first, the seed of the idea for a TV show first started popping up in like 2006 or 7, and it seemed like a pipe dream at the time. It seemed like a long shot. But then, the news came that HBO picked it up, and, you know, a lot of fans of Game of Thrones books are not happy with the TV show and how well it's gone, but I can never hate the show, despite having a lot of criticisms of how they've handled the material. I could never hate it, because it's brought so many people to the books.
Yeah.
You know, the book sales have went through the roof because of the show. So whatever you think of the show, it's made the book reader fandom better.
Oh, yeah.
And
yeah,
that, for us obsessed book readers, has been a great thing. And it's put our fandom just out there. It's not like Star Wars level or anything, or Harry Potter, but it's pretty huge. And that's a great thing for us, because it allows us to bring and have fun with a wide variety of people. We get to go to conventions and meet people who are just excited about nothing but Game of Thrones, and being surrounded by people that they all have that same obsession as you is just a great thing.
Oh, it is. Yeah. And that's true with history podcasting. I mean, there doesn't seem to be, as far as I know, that many history podcast conventions. I mean, I suppose doing things like this is a great way to get that outlet, really. But yeah, I completely understand what you're saying. It's amazing to be able to, especially with the likes of podcasting now, you can engage with people that are like-minded, and it's incredible, really.
Maybe there should be a history podcast con of some kind. I wonder where that would be hard to pull together because it's such a worldwide thing.
Yeah.
You know, there's so many y'all in Europe. There's a lot of history podcasters. There's history podcasters, you know, in Australia and everywhere, you name it, you know, and we're only talking about, that's only talking English speaking countries. You know, I'm sure there's, I don't even know what's going on as far as, there's probably some great other language podcasts and talking history as well, but I don't know those languages, so that wouldn't work for me too well, but I'm sure it's out there. I hope it's out there. If it's not, it's bound to happen. There's so many different sub-genres within history. It's incredible. There's all every once in a while, there's a new podcast that's got a topic that I've never even heard of, and but it immediately sounds interesting, and I just wish I had three more days a week just to listen to podcasts.
Yeah. Oh, big time. Yeah. An extra day to the weekend, perhaps. That would be nice.
Yeah. Or just not sleep anymore. Maybe I don't need sleep. Maybe that's the solution.
I think that is the key to getting more work done, I've found, especially in the last few months, getting all this ready. Yeah.
Yeah, right. Yeah, you've taken on quite a project here. We're all very impressed.
Oh, well, good. Oh, thanks.
I don't think it's something, I'll say this, because you don't want to toot your own horn too much, so I'll say it. A lot of podcast listeners appreciate that a lot more work goes into podcasting than some people think. Some people don't realize that there's a lot of work. Some people kind of assume it's more work than they realize without knowing the specifics. And obviously, I know the specifics, you know, and just as well as you do, presumably. And yeah, there's a lot of little things we have to do. There's a lot of small chores that add up to a lot. And so I'm impressed that you're doing so many episodes, because only another podcaster really knows how much work it is. You can guess. It's like looking at rocket science. Like, I don't know rocket science at all. I know it's complicated. Yeah. I know it's impressive when that rocket flies. I know it's a ton of work, but I couldn't tell you what that work is.
Yeah, you know, I can measure it by, if I tell people who know nothing about podcasts, then they kind of look at me and they're like, ugh. If I tell people who are like listeners, they're like, ooh, that's exciting. And if I tell people who are podcasters, they're like, for like a flash, you can see that they're kind of horrified. And then they're kind of like, oh man, respect kind of thing.
So, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, respect. Yeah. So, oh, cool. Well, it's. I mean, you're doing me a great service here by being a part of this mad remastered project. Yeah. I wanted to ask you, I mean, because we know you do a history of Westeros. We know you're in there with Game of Thrones and all that kind of thing. And I kind of wanted to know more about your historical interest. Like, was there ever, for yourself, a kind of desire to maybe not even launch a history podcast necessarily, but was there ever a massive historical interest in things kind of other than Game of Thrones?
Oh yeah, definitely. I that is one of the things that drew me to Game of Thrones, was how much effort George R. R. Martin put into developing an in-world history. It's extremely rewarding because, well, let me say this a different way. If you look at world building across fantasy, one of the gold standards is, of course, J.R.R. Tolkien, who just put an amazing amount of effort into building Middle-earth. It's just, just in case someone out there doesn't know, he spent over 10 years developing Middle-earth before ever writing a story in that setting. Developing his own language for Elvish, including, you know, both written and spoken. It's really just, no one's ever approached that level of detail. But George R. R. Martin.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
Looks to that as a guideline. And he is also himself is a fan of real world history. And especially, as you could probably tell what some of his favorites are, he's, you know, loves chivalry and, you know, the medieval periods, things like that. But it's not just that. And for me, I was a huge fan, and still am, of Greek history, Roman history, and those are, you know, and a few other periods. I love pirate history. That's another kind of subtopic. And I'm a big fan of the Pirate History Podcast and History of Pirates Podcast and some of these other shows. And I love mostly ancient history. I like, you know, when I was a kid, I was fascinated by World War I and World War II. But when I got older, I just, my taste, my historical taste went back to older stuff. I like, you know, more of the pre-gunpowder era things.
And
I love English history as well. I'm a big fan of that. Early European history, say, like the times of trouble. Simon de Montfort, I love reading about him. But mostly Greek and Roman history. I have a big shelf of those Loeb historical editions with the Greek on one side. And I've read all the Plutarch's books. I've read all of... what's his face? Diodorus Siculus. Siculus. I don't know how to say that. I've read it, but I don't know how to pronounce it. As far as the other part of your question, if I ever thought about doing my own history podcast, definitely. I've tossed around a lot of project ideas in my head. And the one that I would do, the number one on my list, if I were to do one, would be the successors. I've read so much on Alexander the Great. And I would love to cover the successors period. I love, you know, Leonidas and Perdiccas and Seleucus and Ptolemy and Polyperchon and all those guys.
Amazing.
All those dudes.
Yeah.
You know, one of the things we talked about in our pre-recording conversation was Dan Carlin quite a bit. And that's he makes these huge episodes. I can't believe how short his episode on the successors was. That's another reason I thought about doing this, because, hey, Dan Carlin's already done it and he didn't do it very thoroughly. So
yeah,
there's room for that. So I don't know when I'd find the time to do that. I started taking notes, and maybe someday I'll flesh it out some more. But
cool. Yeah. Oh, big time. I mean, I think as well, once you actually have a podcast, you just start to get greedy then, and you're kind of like, I could do this as well, or like, I'd love to do this. And then you do write notes, and you start to think to yourself, I mean, put it another way as well. Have you ever thought about maybe following George R. R. Martin's line and maybe trying to build your own world someday or anything like that?
I have. I have a lot of notes on world building as well. I have several pages of this is what my world would look like. But the task of going beyond and writing stories in it is really daunting. I do have to write a 30 to 40 page script for every History of Westeros episode, but it's a totally different kind of writing. So I feel like I have, you know, more writing experience than the average person, but I have no experience writing fiction pretty much whatsoever. And that's so different.
It is.
Sometimes, you know, you get like a big head of steam, you're like, I can do that. And then I start to think like, no, maybe not. You know, that's just my own arrogance. I don't know that I could do it. Maybe I could, you know, but I can't assume I could. You know, I'd have to sit down and try to really see if I could. But
yeah,
I feel like I could design a cool fantasy world, but writing stories in it, that's a whole nother ballgame.
I think because we're both creators, and I think when you are creative, I think your mind works in different ways to other people's. Like, some people would be like, they might have this kind of desire to write a book someday, maybe. But I think in the position we're in, it's almost like we're being tempted to, like, the prospect. It seems almost possible because we're kind of doing it anyway. Like, if you put all those scripts together, I mean, the book would be like the size, like the height of a wardrobe almost, kind of thing.
Yeah, that's true.
So, like,
and it's a natural thing to want to do, right? Like, as a podcaster, you writing a book makes sense. Like, a lot of famous radio personalities write books because they have a captive audience already and an easy way to advertise it. Hey, my book, you know, you've instantly reached your entire listener base. And they, if they're fans of you, there's a really good chance they're going to buy your book, especially if it's on topic with your show. So it's a real natural fit for someone in our line of industry, so to speak.
Oh, big time. I wanted to ask you as well, because I'm a Game of Thrones fan, all right? And I obviously have to obviously state this first. I'm a Game of Thrones fan. I'm what you would call like a big Game of Thrones fan. I'm one of those potential book readers in that I'd like to read the book someday, but I just kind of haven't done it. And I think the last time I read a book that was not a historical book was 2011. So in that sense, it's kind of hard to imagine me maybe not ever reading the books. Maybe I'll read them on my honeymoon, who knows? But in terms of reading them in the near distant future, but this is a roundabout way of me saying that I'm not as kind of obsessed with this as you, obviously, because I don't have the podcast. But one of my questions here is to kind of ask you, what in your show are you most proud of? I mean, is there anything that you covered and you thought, darn good job on that? And I think if you can think of something, we can use that to kind of be like, hey, if you guys have never heard of Aziz before, check this episode out.
Okay, that's a good question. I'll answer this in a couple of ways. One thing I'd say to you and anyone else who hasn't read the books that is a fan of history is something I sort of touched on with two questions ago, I think, or maybe last question, whatever, was how much George R. R. Martin himself is a fan of history and how fun it is as a fan of history to catch his references to real historical things. You can see, for example, just how, you know, just the way he has certain Eastern, there's a couple of continents that are, there's two main continents that, you know, as where anyone who's watched the show knows, there's the continent that Daenerys is on, Essos, and then there's the Westeros, which is where pretty much everything else is happening. And George, the East is full of references to older cultures, you know, from human history. And it's really neat to find those references. And so for a fan of history, those are little Easter eggs that a more casual reader would not catch. And it's great that he puts those things in there. He really knows how to speak to fans of history within his own world, which is entirely fictional because it's so heavily influenced by real world history. The way he has handled chivalry is extreme, is just really straight from history in a lot of ways, besides changing the specific god they worship and things like that. You know, and the way he does castles, there's a lot of really familiar castles that are based on real castles and a lot of types of, you know, a lot of fighting styles, a lot of different army designs and tactics and things like that are just straight from different historical contexts. There's lockstep legions, which are basically Roman legions, but spliced with slave legions. You know, they're like, they're outfitted like Romans or like maybe a hybrid Greek Roman phalanx, but it's a slave army, and, you know, and there's, which is not terribly ahistorical either. There's certainly plenty of slave armies in history, but, you know, it's just, so he takes these different things that are very recognizable and combines them. For me, that's a particular joy, but there's also just the fact that he's written this in a style that's realistic in an unrealistic setting.
Yeah.
You know, there's the fantasy, it's a fantasy world, but unlike other fantasy settings, that doesn't drive the action. It's just as part of the setting. It's not about, characters can't solve their problems by casting a spell or with some magical thing. They have to handle things like real humans do. And George R. R. Martin has repeated the adage about what's best in the literature world, which is the human heart in conflict with itself. There's that old quote. I think a lot of people are aware of that one. And that's the Song of Ice and Fire, Game of Thrones in a nutshell. Is the struggles you see with these characters on the TV show is very different from seeing their inner thoughts. It's a very different experience, too, when you know someone is, when you see their thoughts, you know that this character is telling the truth, unless they're lying to themselves. But you know, that's, it's a lot different than Is this guy telling the truth? Is he lying to us? You know, on screen, you don't know. But when you see a character's inner thoughts, you have this certainty that is a whole different perspective. The books are meant to be read more than once.
Mm.
In some ways, it's more of a commitment than other series. Not just because it's big, but because it's definitely meant to be read more than once. Because a common device that he uses is to give the answer to a riddle that's in the text, like a mystery within the text, a storyline mystery, or something that he's using as a narrative device. He gives you the answer to this mystery before he actually gives you the question.
Ah.
For example, do you recall the first episode when they find the direwolf pups in the snow?
Yeah, yeah.
In that scene, Jon Snow hears the white pup and goes back for it. And he's like, oh, you know, I heard this animal, and no one else heard it. Now, in the book, what happens in that, it's almost identical in the book, except that you later, over time, very much gradually, you realize that Jon Snow's wolf is completely silent. In the show, it growls. But in the book, it never, ever, ever makes a noise. It doesn't bark, it doesn't growl, it doesn't snarl. So think back to that first chapter. Jon Snow says, hey, did you hear that? And no one else heard it. And the reason no one else heard it isn't because John's the only one who heard it. It's because it was this sort of connection that the wolves developed with their, you know, it was speaking to him, like you could say, you can call it telepathically for lack of a better word. Mm-hmm. He heard it in his mind. But there's no way to catch that that's what happened, because it's chapter one. You don't know that there's any sort of magic going on here at all.
Yeah.
And you reread that chapter many, for some people, years later, and it's just like, oh my God, that's just how sneaky. And the series is just full of stuff like that. It's very rewarding. There's a lot of books that if you dig too deep into the story, you find flaws. You find things that don't match up. You find mistakes. You find timeline errors, like, hey, this guy said this happened a year ago, but 2 years ago, this was true. You know, you find mistakes when you look behind the curtain on a lot of great stories, even some of the better ones. They have these flaws, but we dig deep into George R. R. Martin and we do not find them. You just find more great stuff. You find another layer. Instead of finding, oh, that's the end, it's bad, there's a mistake here, you find that, wow, he's thought about this. He's consistent on these, on the tiniest detail levels, in ways that it blows my mind, because he doesn't seem to have a mechanism for keeping track of all these things.
I think almost the danger in having you on podcasts like these, and that is that I ask you a question about anything to do with the books, and like a true, perfectly reasonably enough, a true fan of the books, when you hear the word book and words book and Game of Thrones, you kind of just go for it. So to ask my original question again.
No, really, at one point I paused during that and I said, wait, what question am I answering here? I'll just keep going.
No bother.
I just shrugged.
Well, the original question I was going to ask was more related to yourself. I mean, you have covered an awful lot of content within the Game of Thrones, like within A Song of Ice and Fire's universe, you could say. So, yeah. I mean, on that, is there anything you did cover that you're especially, like, that you're especially proud of, say?
Like a lot of podcasters, it's hard to just blur the line between what I think is my best work and what's been my most successful work. And that's because you're obviously going to be proud of something that you make that's successful. That's hard to, so it's kind of hard to separate the two in my head. There's certainly the ones that I'm more proud of tend to be not the most popular ones, because they are ones that get into some of these more minutia of detail, or making some like real world historical comparisons, which not everyone listening is going to get those comparisons, or some people aren't even going to care about them at all. Most people do care because they find it interesting. But if I'm being honest, there's bound to be a few listeners that are like, oh, here he goes again, comparing this obscure historical factoid that none of us have heard of. But I think it's rewarding to find these things, because it's like, it's a form of virtual archaeology in a sense.
Oh, yeah,
you're trying to figure out where this author got his real world inspirations.
Yeah.
And those real world inspirations are history.
Yeah, sure.
So, and in some cases, you know, he's inspired by J.R.R. Tolkien, or he's inspired by other fantasy authors. But for the most part, he's building his world in real world terms, and then adds, you know, fantasy to it. So I guess I'm maybe most proud of, I guess I can name two ones. There's two different types of episodes that people seem to like. From, we do major historical episodes, like the history of the setting.
Sure.
And those are my favorite, I think, as a group. And if I were to name one that's maybe my favorite, it would be our Blackfyre Rebellion series, which we have one more to come.
Yes.
Seven-part series. And that's where we get so much of that historical parallel, because the reason for the Blackfyre Rebellions were a series of civil wars in Westeros. And the reason for these civil wars is really, really well done. The reasons that war broke out, the discontent with one side versus the other. It's feels very realistic. You've got one side that's a peace party that is the establishment, or they're a new establishment, and they're trying to make peace with an existing region that's part of this continent that's not part of the main nation. You know, they're not, there's a disunited part of the kingdom. This king is trying to bring all these people together, and he's a peace guy. But Westeros is a warlike place, and a lot of these old noble houses do not want to make friends with this house, because that's, or with this region, because they want to keep fighting them. That's part of their tradition. They have a martial tradition that goes back 1,000 years or whatever.
Yeah.
And it's part of their identity, being warriors and fighting these old. So they're like, no, don't make peace with these people. This is part of our identity. And their candidate for king is this extremely charismatic, chivalrous guy who's, you know, super handsome and super strong, and he's just this Adonis-like figure that's full of charm and virtue, but their reasons for wanting war are just so bad. They just, you know, so it's really well done, because neither side is the good guy, neither side is the bad guy, and they both have, there's good reasons on both sides. Ultimately, I side with the peace party, but you know, this is a fantasy world, so who cares? But I really like that, because it touches on a lot of real-world stuff. We're discussing a fantasy world, but these reasons for civil war could apply to a number of real civil wars.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely.
So familiar. So the other side of that is the, like, complete crackpot, which is people love to theorize about the high magic elements of the story, and they like to come up with these wild theories about what might be behind it all and where it's going. And those things get more and more popular the longer the wait between new material is. <It's> something we've longer, the crazier people's theories get, the longer it's been since there's any new material. And people are just really digging for new stuff. They're like, oh, I'm going to make something new. And
the amount of content that seemed to be produced just by people when it was like, is Jon Snow dead or is he not dead kind of thing. I mean, most of us knew that he was in fact not dead, because that's got to be impossible. But the layers of speculation, I think, was a testament to the fact that when people are that involved in a story, they will almost make it up, because they're so excited about the different ways it could go.
Yeah, for us to see the experience, to have the experience of our favorite books were something we discussed on this one particular internet forum.
Yeah.
In back, you know, it's called Westeros.org, and that was pretty much the main place to go. There were other sites. There's a place called Tower of the Hand that's really good. But mostly there's just a few places where it is. And now Game of Thrones theory discussion is on, you know, Huffington Post. And major media outlets are just posting Game of Thrones theories, like it's because they know they're going to get a lot of traction. They know they're going to get a lot of clicks. And it's like, wow, this is really... When I was growing up, fantasy was for nerds and geeks, and it's not mainstream at all. And now it's totally mainstream. I mean, there's a Harry Potter world, for God's sake.
Yeah, exactly. There is. Park. I think you could find parallels, because we were talking about how you just said there that it's almost like Game of Thrones made fantasy cool in a way. So, I mean, for me, I like to think that, say, we mentioned bigger podcasters such as Dan Carlin, but I mean, even history podcasting in general, maybe history podcasting doesn't make history cool, but maybe it makes it more accessible. And I think if Game of Thrones can be said to make fantasy more accessible, then I think both have an awful lot to offer, other than just the kind of surface aspects of them. Because like I said, like, it could be a gateway. Maybe Game of Thrones leads people into less well-known fantasy authors who do really good stuff, but just aren't that well-known. And then they do really well. I mean, it's kind of like the explosion of the zombie genre, which thankfully is tapering off a little bit now, because that was a bit saturated.
Thankfully.
Yeah. But yes. like that, I mean, there's an awful lot of creators, I guess is what I'm trying to say, creators who do a lot of good work. And I think when there's a kind of explosion in the genre, then it just kind of benefits everyone within it, I feel.
I agree. I definitely agree. And I think I agree with a lot of those your comments just now, too, especially how it brings people in. Even sometimes the vehicle to getting to the good stuff is something that's maybe mediocre. maybe you find a mediocre history podcast that gets you interested in, or maybe not even mediocre, just one that isn't very accurate.
Yeah.
Someone that's more like sensationalist. But if it gets you on the right track, that can be a positive thing. And I think that that's really what George R. R. Martin has done for fantasy, is because it has a bad reputation. Fantasy is a little, I mean, and for a good reason, to be fair. Like, I'm not a big consumer of fantasy books at all. Most of them just aren't good. They just aren't well written. Some of them are very clever. Like, they're good at the world building. They've created interesting characters, fun situations, but the writing just isn't good. The characters are not well written. They don't behave. They behave inconsistently. And there's just not a lot there. It's just kind of fun. It's candy. And I'm not a big fan of candy. But with Game of Thrones, it's just really well written. The writing is top notch. It is literature. A lot of people hate that. They hate seeing anything fantasy called literature, and they just reject that notion straight out. They just can't see it that way. And I think that's just really quite, well, it's kind of snobby, I guess you could say, because literature is good writing. You know, if you write people, characters well, that have character, they develop, they evolve, they think about things, they have the human heart in conflict with itself. I'll say that again.
Yeah.
And if you can do those things and do them well and get, you know, critics to say, wow, this is good, then who cares what genre it is? It's good. It's quality.
Sure.
And that's one thing that I think that as far as bringing people to other fantasy, I think some people might be disappointed. They read Game of Thrones and they think, wow, is there other fantasy like this? And there isn't a lot of it, because a lot of fantasy is written for a younger audience, which means the sexual and violence themes of Game of Thrones, which George puts in there because they're realistic. His attitude is, you can't write about war and not have the dark side of war. You have to have... You have to have gore and rape and these awful things, because war shouldn't be glorified. He doesn't want anyone to think, he wants to show how stupid these characters are in a lot of ways. Like, these guys are all about glory and how awesome war is and how great fighting is and how it makes them all better people. And then he shows how wrong that is. It's like they're all miserable later. They've lost their family and they're not happy because they miss everyone and they've suffered personally as well. And it's just, so it's... It's really well done in a way, in a setting that people have long built up kind of a resistance to, because they've put it in the, oh, this is for kids kind of category.
Yeah.
All right. What did you think? Well, personally, I think Aziz is a very good talker. He knows what he likes, he knows what he doesn't like, and he knows exactly what he's doing with Game of Thrones. He's doing a great job over at History of Westeros. So make sure you go and check him out. A huge thanks again to Aziz for coming on the podcast, for agreeing to give up some of his valuable free time. I mean, it's not a mattress, but it is free time. And yeah, can you believe that? A whole mattress. I'm still waiting for a mattress. And I would be very happy to get a free mattress. But until that day comes, I'm still your humble host of When Diplomacy Fails. Remember, guys, we are still running wild. We're running so wild that there's a second part to this interview. And it is up right now, so go and listen to that. Thanks for listening to this one. I'll be seeing you all soon.